Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, how's it going?
It's going. We got spring training games going on right now, and yeah. I know I have not putting too much stock into anything yet, especially, you know, I know there's a lot of velo talk already, and it's not even March yet, so I don't, you know, let's give it till March at least and see where things are at. But still, you know, you're still seeing some guys throwing new pitches, trying out new things, new whatever. So it's still baseball, and you know, that's we're one step closer to the regular season starting, and we're right in the middle of draft season. It's, you know, it's that time of year.
It is. I had my first draft last weekend, drafted in Barf, and we were talking about it before we jumped on, but really struggled to lock down a secure closer. I got Griffin Jacks at 103, which was a huge min, but I read you all the draft positions of all the other relievers before him, and you seemed very surprised.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and especially so for those who don't know, I mean, it's the same format as TGFBI or same scoring. It's a standard, it's a 15 team roto. You're saying how a couple guys in the 20s, a lot in the 30s and 40s, these closers going. Like Bednar was in the top 50, I think. That's just one of those things that you can't really prepare for in a draft, that you got to be able to pivot on the go. And yeah, I mean, like you read, I mean, I think there's 13, 14 relievers that went before you took Jacks at 103. So, I mean, like I think at that point you don't even worry about like setting the min or the ADP. It's just like, I got Jacks. Mm-hmm. I got my closer, my whatever ranked closer as the 15th RP off the board. And yeah, and just pivot from there. But for you, I'm sure, the top 100, you're able to load up on hitters and pitching. And that's what I try. I mean, I try to load up on hitting in the first five rounds anyway, maybe throw in a starter here and there, or, you know, one or two starters in the top seven rounds, maybe. But I know Nick's whole thing, and like, he won't pick a starter until the seventh round. And yeah, everyone's got their own, you know, I guess, plan. And that's one of those things. It's like the Mike Tyson quote, like, everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. And that's, you can have a plan, but when closers start going like in the 20s, 30s overall, I mean, then you got to just, you got to make a different plan on the fly. But yeah, I like, you know, you ended up with Jackson. You got some dart throws at the end too, which, that's probably going to be where you throw some money on, throw some fab money on some relievers during the season. But that's
definitely,
it's
hard drafting relievers in the top 100. I'm always wanting to wait, but it seems like guys just keep drafting them earlier and earlier. So maybe you got to go sort of in that 80 to 100 range for your first closer if you want somebody like locked into a role.
Yeah, it's got to be like this year. I think it's in particular, especially when it's a 15 teamer, like, you don't want to be there's about 15 closers, or, you know, that you can really trust, and then it gets really dicey. So you don't want to miss out. So I can kind of see why it happened. And especially once what Mason Miller goes like 28, it's like, okay, that's just going to have a snowball effect, 'cause now everyone's, you know, going to fall in line. But yeah, I think that's a tough one, 'cause you don't want to like blow up your own draft board and, you know, panic and, you know, take someone earlier than you'd hope. But at the same time, you don't want to miss out on a closer, especially this year, where it's, you know, after the top 15, 16, it really does fall off a cliff.
Yeah. Yep. I think I'm going to have a lot of Griffin Jacks this year. I just don't think he's being valued as high as I think the two of us value him, and he'll be a pretty good discount. But probably not as much of a discount as we thought he was going to be. I also have not watched a lot of spring training or any spring training. I really haven't even seen many clips. I've been locked into so many other things going on. It was Pokemon Day today, so they revealed the new starters
for
the
next games. Yeah.
So I've been locked into that today as I get back to work following my Disney trip. So there's still a lot going on. I feel like I'm probably not going to lock in until WBC. That's sort of like, for me, I'm
creeping up usually now too, though.
Right. That's good. It's going to creep up. But usually like spring training, I'm like locked in early on. But because I know I'm going to be even more locked into WBC, I'm like, I'll wait back a little and then really, you know, watch a lot of the WBC games, like watch the recaps and everything. I really love it. So I'm excited for that. But that, I think that's probably coming up in March.
I think it's like a week. I think next week there or next weekend maybe there's some games. Yeah, so we're there. We're almost there.
That's quick.
I know, quick,
but it will be fun. I love the WBC and it's gonna be a blast. I mean, if the last one was any indicator, then we are in for a treat. I still have that Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout at bat to close things out in my head. Just an incredible highlight of that WBC. But yeah, super pumped for that. And it'll really get us started in draft season. But today we are here to talk about relievers. As usual, we'll go through the minor transactions that have wrapped up the end of the offseason. Talk about some injuries that have been emerging from spring training. We'll hit on some news. And then we'll do our best to talk about the top guys in holds leagues. So these are guys that are not the closers. We're going to talk about the best non-closers, the guys that are going to get you a lot of holds. So obviously these guys are good in save plus holds leagues as well. So if you're in one of those leagues, definitely stay tuned. These are guys that you're going to get at a reduced price in terms of their ADP because they don't have the ceiling that a closer has. But there are plenty of holds guys that are better than their closer. Plenty of setup men that are better than the closers on their team and can ultimately become the closer of their ball club. But let's start off with some minor transactions. We had the Twins signing Andrew Chafin to a minor league contract. He'll make $2 million if he makes the roster with $1.25 million of incentives available to him. A lefty, Chafin has been around for quite a while and he's pretty reliable. He's somebody that I think every team can use. I'm surprised that nobody wanted him this year. He wasn't bad last year, 2.41 ERA in 33 innings with a 25% strikeout rate. And I'd be surprised if Chafin doesn't make this roster because the Twins bullpen is bad.
Yeah. And they might be okay from the left side now that they've added Taylor Rogers and Anthony Banda and now Chafin. So they have three veteran lefties there, at least. I mean, Chafin, though, I mean, I think Rogers is making $2 million. So if Chafin makes the roster, he's making, you know, the same as
closer money.
He's making, say, exactly. So honestly, between the three, if I had to pick between those three lefties to close, I think Chafin would be my third option. But I'm sure Rogers is the favorite. But I also think Anthony Banda could get in there. And I know I didn't put it in here, but there's some talk about like the Twins hoping that Liam Hendricks can kind of take that role if he's healthy, but I don't think he's healthy.
It's been a while.
They were like saying like, yeah, he topped out at 92 in his last session. It's like 92, man. It's like so far we've fallen. Like last year we were like, all right, if he can hit 96, like he might have a chance to be in the Red Sox, like my high leverage spot, but like now down to 92. I really hope Liam Hendricks can turn things around and get healthy and be a factor this year, but I don't see it. So yeah, probably the lefties are going to carry that Twins bullpen unless Cole Sands can be a little bit more consistent with his because he's got better stuff than pretty much anyone there. It's just consistency with him.
The Cubs signed Shelby Miller. He will not pitch in 2026, but they will have an option on him in 2027, $2.5 million with incentives. Is it an option or is it just a full?
I think it was a full two-year
contract.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's going to
be old by then. That's pretty surprising.
Hey, $2.5 million. We'll see what happens next. Yeah. It's not for the Cubs. It's not. Yeah. I don't, those deals almost rarely work. I maybe like out of the, let's say five that happened, like one out of the five probably work, you know, those 2 year deals when you're just waiting for the second year. But yeah, we'll see. I know he'll be up there in age returning from Tommy John. We'll see. That Cubs bullpen though, a lot of 1 year deals right now. So 2027, it could be some openings for him there.
Yeah, for sure. The Nationals also have some openings. They've gotten rid of a couple guys, and they also have a very wide open back end and front end of the bullpen, for that matter. They signed Drew Smith to a minor league deal. I'm pretty sure he missed all of 2025 after undergoing his second Tommy John surgery. That was in July of 2024. Smith last pitched for the New York Mets, and he was pretty serviceable for them for the duration of his time there. I always felt like he was underrated. If you're in a points league or a holds league, that was definitely a guy you targeted at some point. He'll make $1.75 million if he makes the Nationals. That's Drew Smith. And I guess we just have to see what he looks like coming back from surgery. But given the state of the Nationals bullpen, I don't see why he wouldn't factor in there.
Yeah, I mean, if he's healthy and he looked pretty good in 2024 before he underwent surgery. I mean, if he's back to that level, as bad as that bullpen is, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the closer role at some point. Mm-hmm. I still don't know. I guess Clayton Beter's having a really good camp. That's what I've read. So still in the Beter.
How do they determine that?
I don't know. He's throwing the strikes in his bullpens. in his bullpens. Yeah. I don't know. Again, I haven't looked at too much game data so far. I don't know what mm-hmm. Beter's done in any games so far in this spring, but if his command looks good in March, I'm still on the Beter train. So, but yeah, Drew Smith's out of the darts they're throwing over there, if he's healthy, yeah, he can definitely be in a eighth or ninth inning role for them sooner rather than later.
This was an interesting one. The Giants signed Rowan Wick right after we recorded our last podcast. It's a 1-year deal with the club option for 2027. And I was confused about this one when I first saw it. I was like, oh, Rowan Wick, he hasn't been around forever. And so I looked up his page. He hasn't pitched in the major since 2022, but he has been pitching in NPB over in Japan. And he's been excellent over there. Yeah. 2025 was even better than 2024. 2025, 0.84 ERA. He had a 30% strikeout rate, walked fewer than 7% of batters, 0.84 whip. Really incredible stuff from Rowan Wick. And I started to get excited, and then I realized why he's got the 1-year deal with the club option. He underwent Tommy John surgery after the 2025 season, so he's going to miss all of 2026. Giants are hoping, though, that in his age 34 campaign, they can catch lightning in a bottle, and that Wick can not only recover in full from that Tommy John surgery, but also carry over the success that he found in MPB over to MLB.
Yeah, I know. And I know that was like one of those when I saw the name, mm-hmm. someone had posted it in the Discord as like one of the news, like Rowan Wick. Why? Like, I haven't heard that name.
Where'd they find him? Like, yeah. On the street.
And then, yeah, looking at his MPB numbers, I get why mm-hmm. he was doing awesome over there.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, we had he former Cubs closer kind of for a second, but he was not someone I think we ever felt confident in when he was here. But obviously things have changed. He's probably figured some things out in Japan. Yeah, if he gets healthy next year, again, that Giants bullpen's another bullpen where, like, especially a year from now, like, they'll have Randy Rodriguez coming back, but other than that, I mean, we don't know. It's big year for Ryan Walker. He's got a rebound and prove that last year was a fluke and 2024 was more so what he is. But other than that, yeah, that bullpen's wide open. So Wick should have plenty of opportunity to make the Giants out of spring next year.
The Diamondbacks also have a pretty wide open bullpen, and they claimed Grant Holman from the A's after they DFA'd him to make room for the signing of Aaron Civale. We talked about Grant Holman a couple of years ago as somebody who was interesting. I think his minor league numbers were pretty solid. He never really made a name for himself with the A's, but maybe with the opportunity in Arizona, he can find something. He throws 95, which is fine, but then he's got over 7 feet of extension. So his velocity looks a lot faster than it is to batters. And then he's got a pretty great splitter and a slider that he's working on.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those where, like, a team like the A's who, they need to be, working on developing their young up and coming pitching. Just a little surprise. Aaron Civale is probably
he's only 25.
Yeah, Savali's the better option this year, sure. But Holman showed some things, like some interesting traits as a potential reliever. Yeah, like the fastball does need some work. Command needs some work. But overall, I don't know. There's something here, especially for a Diamondbacks team who really, again, the one that, like, it's a lot of bullpen still that we just kind of throwing things against the wall and hoping something sticks. So maybe Holman, they can figure out, you know, for a way for him to either locate or just get some better shape on his fastball or get add like a tick or two of velocity somehow. He's close to being a legit reliever for them for a team. So worth a shot for the Diamondbacks. And I believe he still has options, so they can stash him in AAA for now and have him work on some things.
All right. We'll run through these last three real quick. We've got the Marlins designating Josh Simpson for assignment to add John King to the roster. They then traded Simpson to the Mariners. The Yankees signed Rafael Montero to a minor league deal, and the Rangers designated Zach Kent for assignment. He was then claimed by the Cardinals and then DFA'd again before the Twins claimed him. Any of these three guys interest you at all? I know Montero has had some success in the past, and Kent, I think, is a lefty, which always adds something.
I don't know, but he's been on so many teams this offseason, and he keeps going to teams that need bullpen help, that have like an open bullpen, and he keeps moving around. Like the Rangers, I thought, like, oh, he probably could make the Rangers.
You're right.
Yeah, he's a righty. He's a righty. Who,
I don't know, lefty.
I think he has a decent fastball. I don't know. These teams that need relief help keep claiming him. Maybe he sticks somewhere. Montero, yeah, I think the Yankees, I mean, that he's, if he looks well, pretty good this spring, chance Montero makes that Yankees roster. That I do think they have a bit of a crunch with the options there, though. But I think they could always, they could option Jake Bird, and if they wanted to make room for Montero. So, yeah, I think he's got a chance to make the roster there. And Simpson, I know the Mariners are looking for another lefty. So Simpson's interesting. I mean, Simpson's probably better than John King. I don't know. But maybe. We'll see. It's a good flyer for the Mariners if he sticks there.
Yeah. All right. Well, that will wrap up the minor transactions. Probably the last transactions we'll talk about until the season gets going, probably all the way until the trade deadline when we
still got Michael Kopech. Michael Kopech's got to sign somewhere. Right.
Okay. He'll get, maybe he'll be our last one. That'll close the book on everything. Next we can talk about some injuries, but first we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham discussing relief pitchers. Let's talk about some injuries that have emerged from spring training. The Dodgers are dodging. They are dealing with Dodgeritis already. Looks like right-hander Bruzdar Gratterall, who had shoulder surgery in November 2024 and missed all of last year, won't be ready for opening day. It doesn't really surprise me because we haven't seen Gratterall pitch in so long, and it's, you know, the Dodgers, but they're going to take it easy on him. Also, Brock Stewart is recovering from shoulder surgery. He's pretty old. He's been injured for like the majority of his career, and he's not expected to be ready for opening day. And then lastly, Evan Phillips, another righty who the Dodgers brought back via free agency this offseason. He had Tommy John surgery in June of last year, so he might even be behind both Stewart and Gratterall in terms of his return timeline. So all three of these guys, Gratterall, Stewart, and Phillips, don't appear to be on track to be ready for opening day.
Yeah, I mean, Gratterall is not surprising. It's he's kind of gone backwards though this spring. I feel like there was some hope early before camp that he might be ready for opening day. And then, like, he threw his first bullpen and he was topping out at like 85, 86. And they're like, okay, oh, gosh, he's not ready.
Yeah. That's the guy who typically throws like 104.
Yeah. They've kind of shut him down now. So it's going backwards with him. I mean, he's one of the more fun, like, relievers. I know he doesn't strike out a ton of guys, but he throws 104. It's just like, downward sink, just throws bowling balls out there, gets so many ground balls, such a good weapon to have in the bullpen. I hope he gets back at some point this year, but yeah, it's just been a couple years now. It's been a journey. Same with Brock Stewart, he's always hurt. think the interesting thing is he says he plans to be available for the majority of the season, which I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's going to happen. But
yeah,
I mean, Stewart, when healthy, it could be a seventh inning guy for them easily. So guy that they're going to be looking forward to. And Evan Phillips, yeah, if he comes back in July, but even July, that's still pretty quick time, timetable. It's 13 months. It's possible, but more likely August, September for him. But yeah, as the Dodgers, they already are stashing all these guys ready to, like, you know, they're going to have a really good IL bullpen this year as they did last year. But yeah, it does open the door for guys like Will Klein, Edgardo Henriquez potentially to have bigger roles.
Mm-hmm. Even Ben Kasparius. Yeah, they are lacking on righties right now, but I'm sure a lot of people are going to get opportunities in this Dodgers bullpen. Let's go back to the Rays bullpen. We talked about Griffin Jacks at the top of the show, and part of the reason why I felt really confident in getting him was due to the injury that Edwin Uceta is dealing with. The club described it as a cranky right shoulder, and that's continued to cause him discomfort. And unfortunately, an MRI confirmed that Uceta is dealing with inflammation and has a slight impingement in his shoulder. He received a cortisone shot and will start throwing next weekend, but it's not clear if Uceta will be ready for opening day. I think that probably closes the book for him opening the season as the closer. I know a lot of people were betting on that, and we were sort of on the other side of that argument, suggesting that Jacks and Clevinger are a better duo to handle the ninth than Uceta because of Uceta's ability to face both righties and lefties and pitch multiple innings. So he's a better high leverage arm. So that gives me more confidence in drafting Griffin Jacks at the least.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. At least even if Uceta was really an option there to take over that closer role or get saves, now he's down. So it might bump Brian Baker into more of a high leverage role or potentially, the occasional save here and there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it still helps out the case for Jacks and Clevinger. Again, this is the only thing with Clevinger, and it's the only thing we've really mentioned, is that there's still no secondary lefty there. So you know, and their starters aren't going long. They're not going deep into games. So Clevinger's probably going to get the toughest lefties the first, I'm guessing like the first time they come around in the order. So that's the only concern with Clevinger getting saves, but I'm sure they have lefties that are starters right now that maybe they transition into a bullpen role to help out with that. But I think it's definitely Jacks, and then there's a pretty big gap, and then Clevinger and Uceta, if healthy, are the next guys up, and Baker in that group as well.
Yeah. Sticking in the AL East, the Blue Jays have added a lot to their bullpen, but it looks like Jimmy Garcia is once again going to start the season on the IL. I don't know if he didn't do that last year, but he spent a lot of last year on the IL as his season was prematurely ended in September by surgery to fix scar tissue in his throwing elbow. Garcia has said that he was 100% ready to pitch in the postseason to begin the season, but he doesn't look like that's going to be the case. Garcia is still recovering from that surgery. I think it was a little bit positive to expect him to be ready for opening day. A little bit hopeful, but Garcia is not going to be ready. And I don't think Hoffman really had too much competition for that role. I didn't expect Jimmy to come back from that surgery and immediately contend with Hoffman for the ninth inning, but that does give Tyler Rogers and Louis Varland a clear run at the seventh and eighth inning.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Garcia healthy, he probably gets it. Probably helps Louis Varland and holds leagues more, or just in like leverage situations more. I think Rogers, they paid. He's obviously going to get some seventh or eighth or maybe the sixth, but I think now this bumps, Varland up into the seventh, eighth inning role until Garcia is back. It does sound like mostly he's going to start the year in the IL, but mostly positive. He feels better than he did last year, whatever that means, whatever. Hopefully that's a good thing. I mean, it should be a good thing. So, yeah, well, let's see, he just says he's a little behind, so hopefully we see him back in May. I thought he had a much better chance of being available on opening day than Jason Adam, who we're about to talk about. But yeah, I think Garcia is a little bit of a surprise, but yeah, it makes sense with the surgery in September.
Yeah, we got positive news on Jason Adam, who underwent surgery to fix a ruptured left quad that he had last September. And it wasn't clear whether or not he'd be fully recovered for opening day, but he's been making a lot of steady progress in spring training. And it looks like he hasn't been told no yet that he's not ready for opening day, which, I don't know, 50-50 seems like.
That's the other thing. He's being positive. So you got to, it's like he's being positive. How does the team feel? I mean, ruptured quad, like that injury was nasty. It was a bad injury. I thought like for sure, like we weren't going to see him till like May or June. He's throwing bullpens. He's throwing like, I guess, normal bullpens, like near 100%. The only thing is like if he can field his position, like how is he moving around the mound if there's, you know, balls in play, bunts and whatnot. So, I mean, off the mound, he's good. I thought that they would be without Adam for a while, but now, that if you get a full season of that Padres bullpen, I know they even lost Robert Suarez, but still, just having Adam, Morejon, and Estrada and Miller, all those guys healthy for a full season is crazy for that team. And hopefully Adam's healthy and ready to go.
All right. Lastly, the Mets left-handed reliever AJ Minter seems to be trending towards spending the first few weeks of the season on the injured list. Seems like he's a month behind the other pitchers in camp, but he hopes to get into a couple of Grapefruit League games before spring training is over. He's not guaranteed to do so. So it seems like the Mets will be starting from behind in the bullpen with AJ Minter opening the season on the IL.
Yeah, I think we kind of knew this was likely. There's some optimism he might be ready for opening day, but that's why, we talked about how they added Brian Hudson this month, and he'll get that first shot at being the second lefty in that bullpen behind Brooks Raley. That bullpen's really, really thin.
AJ Minter's huge for the Mets. Yeah,
and especially they don't have Adbert Elzalet. Where is Elzalet? Oh, they don't even have him projected on the roster. It's the Mets bullpen that could definitely use Minter, probably another arm as well. But for now, they're just hoping to get Minter back for May. It's been a while for him, too. We haven't seen him. I mean, it's going to be over a year when he returns. So, yeah, another guy who at least, I guess, his issues haven't been arm related. So he should be fresh from that aspect. But, yeah, he's dealt with a lot of core muscle things, I think, is what it is. Yeah. So hopefully he's good to go in May.
All right, now let's move over and talk about some news and rumors emerging from spring training. We'll start with the A's, where their bullpen is fairly open, especially in the late innings. Manager Mark Kotze said at the beginning of the spring that he does not intend to designate a closer by opening day. The A's found success with a committee approach after trading Mason Miller at the deadline. Success, I think, is a loose term there. They explored the market for an established closer this offseason, but were seemingly priced out of a quick moving, generally robust free agent relief class. So it seems like they're going to stick with what they got and sort of let one guy emerge or try to just mix and match it together with the lefties and righties. Yeah.
I mean, that seems to be obviously it's a growing trend around the league. For the A's, it probably is the best option for them, because they really don't have, even with like the veterans like Barlow and Mark Leiter, those aren't guys you really want to force into the closer role. Like if someone takes it, sure, but I'm imagining we see multiple guys get save chances in the first week or two. Maybe someone just nails it and runs away with the role. I still like Justin Sterner the best as far as a general reliever goes, as far as his stuff goes. But yeah, I mean, Elvis Alvarado obviously is another name there to keep an eye on. If they do ever stick with one closer who, you know, has closer stuff, it's Elvis Alvarado. But yeah, it's looking like a full blown committee that probably you want to stay away from in any league outside of deep, you know, 15, 16 teamers. Maybe you want to take a chance on Sterner or AL only. Then you probably throw some darts there too. But yeah, it's not what we want to hear. We never want to hear the manager say that they're not going to name a closer by opening day, because then we're left guessing.
Yeah, except for in Milwaukee, where it seems like manager Pat Murphy doesn't want to name a closer. And that might be fine for fantasy managers, because both Abner Uribe and Trevor Megill are elite relievers and should be rostered everywhere until their roles are concrete. But I think for now, they don't want to name a closer. Last year, we saw Megill get the majority of save opportunities during the season, but an injury at the end of the season allowed Uribe to claim that role throughout the postseason. And it looks like they're going to have to battle it out earlier in the season to determine who's going to get the majority of the saves. It's possible we see Uribe and Megill split roles, but my money has been on Uribe taking over that role and Megill stepping back. But either way, I think makes sense.
Yeah, I think I'm feeling like I might be the only, well, outside of the ADP is showing that Megill is the favorite, and I still feel Megill.
People be looking at saves from last season.
I mean, he was the better pitcher too, though, but very close.
Not an ERA.
Oh, in ERA, we're going to talk about ERA. We're not going to talk about saves.
Yeah.
They were every category I looked at, they're very, very close. I give Megill the notch by barely in pretty much every category. So I think the more it's not even the Uribe versus Megill quote or Megill thing, but the quote from Murphy saying that you might see other guys in that mix too. It's just like, dude, come on. We're going to get Jared Koenig's going to get like 8 to 9, 8, 9, 10 saves, or Aaron Ashby's going to start closing out games too. I mean, is that what he means by this? Or because I think, yeah, like the quote, I think he's talking about Megill and Uribe, because that's who everyone immediately thinks. But then he says, you might see other guys in that mix too. And then he's like, I mean, what, this is a quote from Murphy. I mean, that's kind of like the message to the whole Milwaukee Brewers team, right? You have to be uncommon. Because they're all, you know, I get that. They're all like, you know, Sal Frelick and like platoon guys who are just trying to scrap and claw and find ways onto the roster and do their role, do their job. But like when you have Trevor Megill and Abner Uribe, I feel like you just like, those are your seventh, that's your eighth and ninth inning guys. I think you say, I mean, I guess if there's three lefties in the ninth, you can throw Koenig out there. But I don't know. I still, Megill, and for Megill, Megill wants the role. He wants the job. I think his quote was, I think we can probably roll the same way we rolled last year. I agree with you, Trevor. I think that's, I think you guys can just, you know, Uribe will get his chance to close out games. You know, Devin Williams got his chance eventually after Hader left. Like there's a succession here. But I think Megill for this year should be the guy in the ninth as long as he's healthy. But I don't know. We'll see. They're both really good. Both need to be rostered.
Yeah,
I think McGill's going too high right now in drafts, so I'm probably not going to roster him anywhere. But I would imagine that ADP starts to slip as we find out news like this. And I don't know, as Uribe is probably going to have some electric spring outings that is going to hype everyone up. So if McGill's, if McGill's ADP slips, he might be a bargain. But right now, it's still too high for me.
Yeah, I agree. That's sort of what I meant by I've been targeting Uribe more. It's just because he's going later in drafts, and you know, with this with this whole story about Uribe and Megill possibly splitting the role or it being undetermined right now, I'm just more inclined to go with the guy who's going later. And I think they're
for sure,
like you said, they are comparable pitchers where it's like you can't go wrong with either of them. So I'm going to take whoever goes later. And I've been avoiding, well, I've only done one draft, but I haven't gotten either of them in my mock drafts or full drafts.
That's the thing. Uribe is like still a little too high for me because like, yeah, there's still questions there, and like he's going like 200 or before 200, and it's like if for a guy who doesn't have a role, yeah, I don't know. But
McGill went really early too in my Barf draft last weekend, so
I think I'm just, it might be avoid both situations. Similar to like the Dodgers, remember the Dodgers last year, Tanner Scott and like Kirby Yates were both going like top 200, and
yeah,
it's just like that's just too messy. I don't know.
All right. The Diamondbacks have a trio of closer options. All three of Paul Sewald, Kevin Ginkle, and Ryan Thompson were mentioned as closer options by manager Torey Lovullo. He said, I mean, it's probably simple arithmetic for you guys to figure out. I'm just going to kind of go in blind here, but Sewald, Ginkle, Thompson, all those guys that have had experience in big moments, they're all wanting to do it. One thing is clear, however, Lovullo wants to have a defined closer.
Thank you, Torey.
Yeah. But he's not going to name it.
He's not going to tell us who, but he wants one. Yeah. I mean, I know I read
every manager wants one.
I would imagine. Yeah. Like I understand. Yeah. There are really two schools of like having set roles versus having set like matchups almost is kind of how it's like one or two things. And like the next guy is more of a pocket matchup situational manager. But for now, for the Diamondbacks, yeah, I think he did mention, like, do we put any stock into the fact that he mentioned Sewald first? He said Sewald, Ginkle, Tom. Like, that's like the first thing that came to mind is, like, is he leaning Sewald? That's the first name he mentioned. I think, honestly, in that order, that's kind of how I'm leaning, is Sewald probably the favorite slightly, and then Ginkle, and then Thompson if the first two just fail.
I think if Sewald's healthy, that's the way I'd go too.
And I know he didn't pitch much last year and he was hurt, but like when he was healthy and pitching last year, he still looked pretty good.
Which Ginkle can't say.
I don't know if he was healthy. Yeah, I know.
When he was pitching, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
He was not good.
No. So, yeah, I think that's probably the best way for them, honestly, to Sewald in the ninth, Ginkle the eighth, Thompson the seventh, and Mixon, whoever else you want there. But yeah, I figured it was going to be one of the veterans either way, because that's just how Torey Lovullo rolls. But hopefully we don't have to. I mean, what happens if Sewald? I mean, if Sewald's pitching well and AJ Puck comes back in June, I don't think they remove Sewald from the role either.
Really?
I don't know. That's like you, if it's not
maybe broke, not immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably kind of ease him in. And like once Sewald has a couple. Clunkers, you move Puck into the role, but I mean, I still like if you have a lot of IL spots to stash AJ Puck, it's a good stash, probably the best reliever stash right now. But you have to wait 2 months, and that's where it's like it's not someone you need to have stashed.
Okay, lastly, we've got the Marlins, who are gearing up to frustrate us once again. Last year, they played matchups and they used their relievers in pockets when navigating the latter part of games. That means Calvin Fauché got a lot of saves, and their better reliever, Ronnie Henriquez, who was really a breakout last year, didn't get a lot of save opportunities. He only had 7 saves last year. So we thought with the Marlins bringing Pete Fairbanks aboard via free agency that they'd use the bullpen more traditionally, and maybe they will do it more than they did last year, but it seems like they're going to mess around a little bit with the usage, probably mix in Calvin Fauché and Tyler Phillips and Anthony Bender like they did last year, which would be definitely against our will. I think we just want Pete Fairbanks to get the ninth, and that's where he's found success over the past 3 years. Unfortunately, though, the Marlins and Clayton McCullough want to give us a headache.
Yeah, and at least he says, you know, well, he starts off like, we'll continue to look at the pen very much like we did last year. That's not great. But then he says, you know, certainly Pete Fairbanks is going to finish a lot of games for us. So it's better. So he should lead the team in saves for sure. And I think there was another, in this whole article, there was also the mention about how he wants all of his relievers to be able to work multiple innings, except for Pete Fairbanks, who's strictly going to be a one inning guy. So that also is like, okay, maybe just give him the ninth inning, set it and forget it. Because they didn't really have that last year, even with how good Henriquez was awesome because he could go multiple innings. And
Right.
You could play matchups with him and use him in different situations. But I feel like, yeah, Fairbanks is, I think you got to kind of change based on your personnel. And Fairbanks is, yeah, he's kind of like Kenley Jansen, where it's like you're only giving him one inning. Like, you got to give him just one inning. Let him just work the ninth and just worry about that, and he'll be great. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm not too worried about Fairbanks based on this comment. But, yeah, I mean, we gotta remember that bullpen last year was such a headache. And maybe we see Fairbanks in the eighth inning more often than we'd hope for. But if he's healthy still, he should still get 25 to 30 saves there, I think.
All right. Well, that wraps up the transactions and news and injuries. So let's hop into our main topic and discuss the best guys to target for holds. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. We are going to talk about the top options for holds and guys that we are targeting. Rick has a ton of rankings out on Pitcher List. You have just one for holds, right?
I do holds. The rankings so far have just been saves only and then saves plus holds. So there isn't a separate holds one yet. I actually just kind of put it together now for this, taking out like the definite closers and
out of your save plus holds
or the ranking. Yeah, the guys who I think, so I don't have Robert Stevenson or Sterner in here because I think those guys might be closers. Again, that's another discussion, but yeah, this is just mostly the hold. This should be only holds guys.
Okay, so this is like the top setup men in baseball, and let's just start at the top. I mean, we won't be able to get through everybody. You got 120 guys on this list, so I don't think we'll be able to get through everybody.
Oh, and there's more.
I'm sure there are. Let's see how many though we can get through now. So I think the consensus at the top is Brian Abreu, Abner Ribe, Jeremiah Estrada. I think most people
in whatever order
would
you
agree
want
on that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, I really like, obviously I like all of them, but I think Brian Abreu really interests me this year just because of the uncertainty surrounding Hader's health. So yeah. I like him even in a saves league, but Brian Abreu is certainly even underrated in my books. He's been so good for the last 4 years.
Yeah, and he got off to he's been super consistent, which is so rare with these guys. It's like not only is his, you know, ceiling from a strikeout standpoint and ratio standpoint really great, but he's been consistent. And he got off to a really slow start. I think it was last year, right? Yeah, he got to a slow start, but then he righted the ship pretty quickly. You know, figured things out. Like of these guys, because Estrada we've only gotten 2 years for. I mean, Uribe was really just last year. Mm-hmm. Whitlock, you know, just coming back last year too. You said it, not that much. You know, so Abreu is like that kind of rare unicorn of a holds reliever where we've gotten consistency as well as upside from him over the past, you know, few years. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year too. That's going to be. He better get a closer job next year. Yeah. As long as he pitches well again this year. Yeah, he should be closing next year somewhere, finally. So, we'll see. But, yeah, I think that's Abreu probably. I mean, I could make a case for Estrada to be the top guy here, but I think Abreu, especially with the uncertainty of Hader, is number one for me right now.
There's a lot more competition in San Diego as well. Yeah. Like, Estrada's going to have to deal with Jason Adam and Adrian Morejon competing for hold opportunity. So I think I agree with that ranking. I am surprised to see Whitlock so high. Not only am I surprised to see rank him that high, I'm surprised to see how good he was last year. I think that was really quiet. What makes you believe in this sort of new ceiling for Garrett Whitlock? Because we haven't really seen this level of strikeout ability from him at any point in his career.
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, we finally got to see him for a full, not finally, it happened. It's been a while, but we finally, got him a full year in the bullpen.
Yeah. Cause we saw that in his rookie year, 2021, when he was a Rule 5 pick, but even then he had a 14% swing strike rate. And last year he was at 17.4%, which allowed him to strike out more than 31% of the batters he faced.
Yeah. And he got better as the year went on. His second half was amazing. 2.06 Sierra, 30% K minus walk, 18.5 swing and strike over his final 32 innings. I've always been a big fan of his changeup, but last year it was really more of his slider was really dominant against righties. And just being able to throw out of the bullpen, be healthy there. He's throwing 96 out of the bullpen, which is up three ticks from him as a starter.
Yeah, that's huge.
And yeah, and he gets a lot of good sink on it. 7.3 feet of extension at 96 with those two really good secondaries. And it's a great situation for him with Boston because that bullpen behind him and Chapman is like, you know, it's Justin Slayton. Slayton hopefully can bounce back. And other than that, it's very thin. It's not much to be excited about the Red Sox bullpen right now as a Red Sox fan. So, but Whitlock is that guy. I mean, he was like the first guy who committed to Team USA for the World Baseball Classic, or one of the first bullpen guys, I think, to commit for the Team USA. So like he's a dude for them. And yeah, just the second half last year sold me on him. Cause yeah, I wasn't sure if he would ever be this high, like as far as upside goes, but the second half last year, I'm buying in.
All right. Moving down the list, we got Adrian Morejon, Matt Brash, Gabe Spier, Garrett Clevenger, and Dylan Lee. We've got a lot of lefties. We got a couple guys in the Mariners bullpen. I think I skipped over Edwin Uceta at five as well.
That's like we'll see how healthy he is. And yeah.
Yeah, Morejon, like I said, is going to be competing with Estrada for holds in San Diego. But Brash and Spier are both very high upside guys. We saw Spier bounce back from a down season and was one of the best relievers in baseball for the whole season last year, nearly striking out 34% of the batters he faced. And Matt Brash returned after missing some time and looked elite once again. I mean, Matt Brash's stuff is undeniable. I remember when he was first coming up in spring training and just seeing his stuff is crazy. He just can't control it. I think both of those guys are really good though. They do also have a lot of competition because that Mariners bullpen is so good. And obviously they'll be competing with each other for holds.
Right. And they added Jose Ferrer too.
Exactly.
Like gives Spier some,
Bizardo was great last year.
Yeah, I know. But especially in the second half in the postseason, they really leaned on him. Even like we talked about, Carlos Vargas is just like the last, he's like a long guy for them who's going to be like the last reliever, but he's got ridiculous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which I mentioned in my 300 relievers article that like if you go to Carlos Vargas and look at his cutter GIF from 2025, he doesn't even throw his cutter that much. Mm-hmm. But he threw like an absolute filthy cutter against Mike Trout last year, one of my favorite pitches I saw going through all the players, all the relievers.
I'm watching it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is nasty.
But yeah, I mean, I think Brash pitched better than I expected last year coming off Tommy John. He was down 2 miles per hour in his fastball, and he really leaned on his slider. His fastball is, he used to throw hard. He still throws hard, but he used to throw like 98, and that was great, but it's always been his slider with him. He can live with just the slider being dominant, but if he can get the 2 miles per hour back now that he's 2 years removed from Tommy John, then, you know, we see him back up to being like a 30% strikeout guy again. Maybe, you know, before Tommy John, he was like we were talking about him as one of the more elite, setup options. I know the walk rate command has always been an issue with him, but the strikeout stuff is top tier. So we get that velocity back, then we can see that strikeout stuff get to, you know, above 30% again, that K rate. But even if he doesn't, I mean, he still was really good last year without it. The slider's just crazy good. I'm kind of hoping Brash gets some velocity back and gets that strikeout rate up a little bit. But even still, I feel pretty confident with him.
And then Dylan Lee at 10, he's always been very underrated as well. I think the Braves have never really deployed him as one of their best relievers. It was always like they had Aaron Bummer and they always used him more so than they did Dylan Lee. But Lee last year got 19 holds, which I think was a career high. And he's always been somebody with a really high strikeout rate. It always felt like he even had a higher ceiling to reach if they just used him more traditionally. He's somebody with one of the best strikeout minus walk rates in baseball, gets tons of whiffs. That's, I think, just a really exciting pitcher, but now he's going to have similar competition. Like he's not going to be the eighth inning guy because the Braves brought back Iglesias and brought in Robert Suarez. So there is seems like two guys that are going to be locked into the eighth and ninth inning. Do you think that affects Lee's ability to get holds? Like, do you think he's going to get more than he had last year?
I don't know about more, but I think he should be good for 20. He's definitely, and like they have Bummer there, but Bummer hasn't been getting holds for them anyway. So I don't see, I mean, Lee's their top lefty, seventh, eighth inning, depending on matchups. I think that's how they're going to play it. And he's, yeah, he's just really, there's this, like you said, there's all these lefties, and they think there's a reason. There was a whole resurgence of lefties in the, as far as starting pitching went last year, too. The same thing happened with relievers. Like, all this really good group of lefties kind of took a step forward last year, Lee being one of them. And he had a chance to close out games for a little bit when Iglesias struggled, but didn't really work out, and Iglesias got the job back. But yeah, he's always missed bats at a high level. His slider is one of the best, you know, pitches, one of the best lefty sliders in the game, especially out of the bullpen. And the four seamer has gotten better every year. And that's, I think last year he got it up to, you know, 94 last year with 18.7 inches of IVB on it, induced vertical break. Just a really steady fastball to go with his already, you know, big swing and miss slider. So I think he could close out games for a team. I think he's one of those lefties who like has that type of closer stuff. But even still here, it's going to be, I mean, if Iglesias is back, if he can get off to a good start, that's a really good three-headed monster the Braves have, with Lee, Suarez, and Iglesias. So I still think there should be plenty of holds opportunities for Lee, even with Suarez being there. Just because that being, I think that's a part of the reason with these lefties. It's like being that top lefty in your bullpen automatically puts you in a really good spot to get holds, because you're going to get whoever's best left-handed hitter is in the seventh, eighth inning, whatever it is. So you're going to get a ton of hold chances as being that top lefty.
Mm-hmm. Wrapping up the top 15, we've got Phil Maton, Alex Vesia, Andrew Kittredge, Robert Suarez, and Tanner Scott. We talked about Suarez a little bit there in that Braves bullpen, but we will see Phil Maton and Andrew Kittredge pitching for new teams. Kittredge has pitched for the Orioles in the past, but they are going to new teams that they did not pitch for last year, and they are veterans, and they do have solid closers ahead of them, but I wouldn't be surprised if at some point these guys are thrust into the ninth inning. Both Maton and Kittredge were very good last year, and I think it's just a question of how comfortable do you feel about these guys sort of fighting off old age and getting comfortable with these new versions of themselves.
Yeah, I think for them especially, like, age isn't too big of a thing, because they're not, obviously Maton's not a big, he's not a big velocity guy.
Yeah.
And same with Kittredge, you know, it's really with Kittredge, it's his sinker and just really good slider. Really good. It's like an elite slider for Kittredge. 5.5 PLV, 24% swing strike rate with the slider last year. And yeah, it's even, they're guys even in save only leagues, especially deeper ones, I'm like still kind of have an eye on, because, you know, Helsley in front of Kittredge, Helsley struggled last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Palencia, it seems like the market's pretty down on Palencia right now. His ADP is not as high as I thought it was or thought it would be. I know he's coming off an injury and wasn't the closer in October, but I feel a little bit better about Palencia than I think a lot of other people do. Even so, though, you have Phil Maton, who's a completely different type of pitcher, but someone who last year, like, I don't know if I'm going to say broke out, because he kind of broke out before that, but like that last year was his best year by far. He's a very unique pitcher with his fastball / cutter. It's really like a cutter he throws at like 89, 90 at the top of the zone. It just has very unique shape and break to it. I think those are two guys that are kind of being ignored. I don't know if it's age or maybe people are thinking last year was a fluke for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're both, should be holds targets. And I think someone asked me recently, like a couple, like under the radar holds guys. And those are the two that kind of came to mind for me, because they're not, the ones that we really get talked about that often. But I mean, Maton strikeout, 32.3% strikeout rate last year. That's, you know, that's 35% CSW. I mean, that's elite stuff.
You mentioned being the top lefty in a bullpen can give you a lot of holds opportunities, but in Hollywood, the Dodgers have a pair of lefties that are, I think, comparable, with Tanner Scott having more closer experience and Alex Vesia having more continued success. Both of those guys you have in this five player range, 12 and 15 respectively. You have Vesia over Scott. Why is that?
Probably consistency. Like you said with Scott, it's been, there's highs and lows with him. The highs are awesome, and they're like, you know, he's one of the best lefties in baseball, but the lows are frustrating. And Vesia does have some lows too, but I think ultimately, yeah, they are similar. I like Vesia's command better, and his fastball is just ultimately better. And it's not even velocity wise. It's not, his fastball sits at 92.7 miles per hour, but 100th percentile IVB, gets 20.3 inches of induced vertical break on his fastball. Best in the game, best is amongst left-handed relievers. And that's, you don't need to throw hard if you have, he throws 92.7, but it works because of that. And is now, this is where I like Tanner Scott's slider better. Vesia's slider has been getting better. Scott's got a more swing and miss slider, but again, the command with Vesia and the fastball is such a, the fastball is going to be elite no matter what. So I lean Vesia. I think they should both be in line. And this is where it's tough when you have those two lefties in the eighth, and I don't know, Vesia could pitch in the sixth inning a little bit more than we thought, but they should both be in line for a good, like the same amount of holds. Maybe Scott gets a little bit more if he stays healthy and can prove that last year was not who he really is. And again, he dealt with some bad luck last year as well as, you know, some injuries. So I like Scott to bounce back, and but Vesia has just always been there and someone that, you know, Dave Roberts isn't going to turn away from anytime soon. So they should both be great options. And honestly, they could be the seventh and eighth inning guys there. I mean, I like them better than, they're both way better than Blake Treinen right now.
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on, yeah, lefty righty matchups probably.
The next five, we've got Luke Weaver, Jason Adam, Fernando Cruz, Mason Montgomery, and Grant Taylor. Got a lot of strikeout upside with Weaver, Adam, and Cruz. Do you feel like you're a little bit, you're being aggressive on your rankings of Montgomery and Taylor?
Montgomery, definitely. Taylor, maybe. I'm just trying to be, I'm trying to be optimistic with Montgomery because everything, I mean, everything just grades out so well that I don't want to miss out of if this upside does hit. And I think at this point where, you know, where I pass like the top 16 holds guys, you start looking more at upside and you can find some more, the consistent guys are probably, you can find them on the wire around this point. But Montgomery, so far, you know, that's one guy I have looked at some spring training stuff, and his fastball command still isn't great. It's still not there. It's February, so I'm not panicking yet. I just want to see him be able to locate his fastball at the top of the zone more consistently. It has been fun seeing him throw a curveball. He's mixing a curveball to righties that looks pretty solid. So I mean, last year he was only fastball slider. If he has a curveball to also match to throw against righties with the slider against lefties and just that fastball, I mean, if he can just command the stuff better, it's like he's so close to being one of the best relievers in baseball. But yeah, just hoping on command. And I guess the same kind of goes with Grant Taylor. I don't know what his role is, and I think holds could be an issue for him.
Because they might use him multiple innings and sometimes in a save opportunity and sometimes like as an opener. Yeah.
I'm hoping he kind of ends up being my best case scenario for him is like the Ronnie Henriquez role from last year, where a couple saves, a couple wins, a couple holds. but just a ton of strikeouts and good ratios. And
yeah,
last year he was very unlucky. Our PL projections for him are like insane. Like they're very, very bullish on him. And I get it. His stuff is crazy. But yeah, we just got to see what the role is for him. But again, the upside for Montgomery and Taylor, I don't really want to miss out on this point in the rankings where I think it's you can get have a little fun with it and go for the high talent, high upside guys.
Sure. Yeah, I'm starting to like this White Sox bullpen. They yeah. have some pretty interesting names.
Yeah, if they, you know, Sir Anthony can keep it together, keep that walk rate. There's some interesting guys there.
Mm-hmm.
Could be, again, they're going to be a lot better than they have been in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're not going to be a playoff team probably, but they'll be better.
Yeah. Who knows? It's the AL Central. It's
that's true really too. Yeah.
Anybody's division to win. The next five guys we have are Brad Keller, Ryan Kirkring, Louis Varland, Will Vest, and Kyle Finnegan. So we have a couple of teammate pairings in Brad Keller and Kirkring and Vest and Finnegan. Kirkring was sort of underwhelming last year after being a guy that we had sort of a lot of people had projected to be the like closer of the future in Philly. But now with Yoan Duran there and now Brad Keller there, Kirkring continues to move down the ladder. We really liked what Keller did last year. His second half was crazy. So I don't know. I'm sort of surprised to see Kirkring this high.
Yeah, I think the stuff still grades out really highly, and his second half was a lot better. Second half, 2.92 Sierra, 22.3% K minus walk, 118 stuff plus. The sweeper is one of the best really in baseball, especially out of the bullpen. And that hasn't changed since he's been called up. The fastball is where he still needs some work command wise, but the sweeper is going to carry him, at least give him a good floor. I think Keller, I really love what he did in the second half. He was awesome. 2.64 xFIP, 35.4% K rate. And I think, I don't know. I think it's partially the nothing really grades out as like a plus offering from him. And I guess four seamer, he got his velocity up to 97, which is great because the shape's not great. It's not the locations and shape aren't ideal with his four seamer, but he being able to throw 97 last year helped a lot, obviously. I think he might have more win. I mean, he'll probably have a lot of holds, but he'll have like a good amount of wins, I think, too. He'll still be very valuable. Probably in that Jeff Hoffman role from 2024-23.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's just the fastball for me kind of bumped him down a little bit. I know a lot of people are probably higher than 20 on him. So, I'm still optimistic he's going to be pretty good.
It's Brad Keller. You had Vest over Finnegan. Is that because you think Finnegan will get more save opportunities or because you like Vest's floor over Finnegan's ceiling?
The second thing. I think I like Vest better than Finnegan as... So I was going through like sleeper and bust and all that. And... Mm-hmm. For save only leagues, I actually have Vest as a bust and Finnegan as kind of a sleeper. Because Finnegan's going like 100 picks later than Vest in save only leagues, which is interesting to me. Because I think I know Vest was like the closer for the Tigers last year, but given their histories and the guys who were getting paid, I just feel like Finnegan is like the second option there for saves if something happens to Jansen or if they do go a committee route. I think we've talked about how Vest can be a four to five out guy, multiple inning guy for them. He'll have a more expanded role now that he doesn't have to, you know, that they're not going to wait for him in the ninth inning. I know Finnegan, I love what he did in Detroit. We'll see if that can carry over, like the splitter usage. I know he talked earlier this offseason about trying to like readjust to what he did when he got to Detroit. So now he wants to throw his curveball more, which I don't know. We'll see. The splitter fastball thing worked really well for him last year, so we'll see how the curveball does. But I think Vest just overall value for a holds league is a little bit better. But I think Finnegan was going to get more saves than Vest, and it might not even be that many. But if I had to guess, I would rather Finnegan in a save only.
Yeah.
But Vest I'll take for the ratios and strikeout numbers where, yeah, it's more consistent. I have a better feeling about Vest than hoping Finnegan can, you know, replicate what he did in the second half last year.
Okay, let's do groupings of 10 so that we can get further down this list. We've got Hunter Gaddis, Aaron Ashby, Matt Strom, Brian Baker, Stephen Okert from 26 to 30, and then from 31 to 35, we've got Bennett Sousa, Caleb Thielbar, Connor Phillips, Eric Sabrowski, and Matt Svonson. Gaddis had 35 holds last year. Aaron Ashby, I think, is like really dope coming out of the bullpen. I prefer him in that reliever role than as a starter. Matt Strom has been one of the most consistent relievers in baseball. And I think with Carlos Estevez likely to lose the closer role, Strom could really move up that ladder really fast.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, because Estevez is throwing 87 miles per hour this spring. I think a lot of people are starting to ask who's the next guy up. Is it Urseg? Is it someone else?
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder. I mean, I never really thought of Strom because the lefty thing, and he's never really been a closer, but maybe that is a route that the Royals would take. They have Lynch there as another lefty who's not great, but he's another lefty. If they wanted to go with Strom in the ninth, or I don't know, we're probably getting ahead of ourselves, but yeah, Strom still, you know, took a step back last year. It was probably the worst year, you know, metrically from him that we've seen since he's been a full-time reliever. But I still think, you know, moving to Kansas City back there, it's pretty good. And even with the fences coming in, still a better situation, I think, for Strom. I, you know, the stuff's diminishing for him, but he's still a solid lefty that's the thing with Estevez. There's no one behind him that I'm like, oh, that's going to be the guy. He's going to be dominant. It's just, maybe Ursa can get it back together. Maybe Mears can, you know, get back to where he was 2 years ago. It's just a bunch of guys who have had really good years in the past, but not coming off those really good years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Strom is the most reliable there, though. I put some money down on Urseg in BARF. So I feel like just because he's a righty, that's why I'm leading Urseg. But if, you know, if we're just going straight skills, I'm picking Strom, I think. You have, speaking of lefties, you have Stephen Okert and Bennett Sousa, both of the Astros, back-to-back. Funnily enough, Roster Resource projects Bennett Sousa in the minors to start the year. That's partially because they have like nobody in that bullpen with options. I think if they're going to put one of those lefties and keep the rest of the bullpen intact and put one of the lefties that they have in the minors, it should be Brian King. I mean, he's pitched the worst last year. He's got three options left, so you can bring him up and send it back down. Sousa only has one more option, so I don't really know how that's going to work. But I think that makes sense to have Okert over Sousa because of that, you know, insecurity in the roster spot. But I'd be so surprised if they didn't have Sousa in the majors.
Yeah, and I think I'm guessing, I know Nate Pearson's probably going to end up on the IL or something. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're going to make room for Sousa somehow. He was so good last year. If he's not on the opening day roster, then trade him, or like teams should be calling. I know every team's like looking for lefties. Garrett Clevenger was a trade target, or was mentioned as a potential trade target. Like if like the Astros have so many lefties, I know Hader's hurt. If Hader's ready to go opening day, and Sousa's not going to make your opening day roster, then like, yeah, trade him or trade Brian King or Okert, someone. Mm-hmm. Sousa belongs. And obviously my ranking is assuming he's going to make the opening day roster, which again, like 22.1% K minus walk last year, 19.5 swing strike. He wasn't healthy at the end of the season. I don't know if I don't think he's pitched a spring yet. There's like no information on him because no one really ever asks about middle relievers or setup guys that often. So there's no information on what he's up to. I think he's thrown some bullpens, so I'm guessing he's healthy, or at least he's closer to being healthy than Josh Hader is. So hoping he's ready for opening day. But yeah, that left-handed trio in Houston is crazy.
And the trio to close out this group of 10, I think, is where you have the three sort of sleepers in my mind. Connor Phillips, Eric Sobrowski, and Matt Svensson all showed a very high ceiling last year. And I think these are going to be more underrated names that I don't think everybody's in on, that if you're in a holds league, these are guys that I'd be wanting to get. Sobrowski has always had a really high strikeout rate. He just hasn't stayed healthy enough to pitch in the majors. But last year, 35% strikeout rate, sub 2 ERA. Connor Phillips throws super hard. He is pitching it for the Reds. He had a sub 3 ERA last year and a 33% strikeout rate. And then Matt Svensson had his own sub 2 ERA and a 29% strikeout rate. And he definitely has the highest ceiling of anybody in the Cardinals bullpen. So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point he takes over the closer role. But if all three of these guys are setup men, I like the ceiling on all three of them.
Yeah, that's the questions with these guys is role, and you know, are they going to get better this year, or are they going to take a step back because it's kind of their second year? Sobrowski's been around a little bit longer, but for Svensson and Phillips, their first kind of stint as relievers was last year. Mm-hmm. So like, where do they go from here? I mean, I love Sobrowski. I know. Like Nick has the whole swatch thing for lefty or no.
That's right.
The southpaw with dope changeup or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Tight changeup.
I need something for like, because there's a lot of these lefties on this list. It's like Sobrowski only throws 94, but he, like 19 inches of induced vertical break. Lives at the top of the zone. Like that's like the Sobrowskis, the Vezias, these lefties with, they don't throw hard, but they have great, you know, IBB metrics. They live at the top of the zone and they're just dominate with it. Someone will have to come up with a term for that. But I love Sobrowski. Just him staying healthy is a big thing. But yeah, that's really good situation for him in Cleveland because he's a lot better than Tim Herron. So he could be the top lefty there. Phillips is the one who, if I knew he was going to get a seventh inning role or, you know, eighth inning role, sure. But even a seventh inning role for Connor Phillips, I would be probably top 20, top 25 at least with him. That Reds bullpen is kind of deep. I think talent wise, though, like
roster resource has him so low.
I know. I mean, then they went out and got Pierce Johnson. They've added other guys. Mm-hmm. It's like, add Pierce Johnson, whatever. Depth doesn't hurt anyone. But Brogdon, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing him in his first full year as a reliever because Connor. The fastball really played up out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
It's like he was a very interesting starter prospect for me. But yeah, I'm hoping he stays healthy, but like in a Robert Stevenson kind of like trajectory for me where, you know, didn't pan out, or Jeff Hoffman, I guess too, didn't pan out as a starter, but I feel like there's the really good bullpen upside with them.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the third one? Svensson. Yeah. I'm going back and forth on it. In the fall, I thought Svensson was my favorite to get saves in St. Louis. I liked him more than Riley O'Brien. I kind of liked O'Brien the more I looked into him, but now O'Brien's hurt, so could open the door for Svensson right away to get some saves in St. Louis.
All right.
I don't know if he doesn't have the Connor Phillips type upside. I don't think the strikeout upside is the same, but he's still very, very good. He's not going to hurt you ratio. I mean, his ratios were crazy last year.
Mm-hmm.
Really good fastball. But I don't know if the strikeout upside is where it is with some of the other guys here, but he'll definitely get holds. He'll definitely have solid ratios for you.
All right. Now we have like a grouping of veterans, Drew Pomeranz, Sean Armstrong, Chris Martin, Jordan Leisure, Jose Alvarado, Leisure sort of thrown in there, but all those guys just are reliable as long as they're pitching for their teams. I like Armstrong on the Guardians. They're very good at pitching development and they love their role. So if he's like locked into the seventh inning or the sixth inning behind Gattis and or Sobrowski, he should be pretty solid. I mean, 2.31 ERA last year from Sean Armstrong. Chris Martin is great every single year, and Jose Alvarado. I don't think I read something about his PED suspension, that it was like he was using like a GLP-1, a weight loss drug.
And really?
And it had something in it that flagged as steroids, and that's why he got suspended last year. And I was very intrigued by that, because usually you don't get a lot of insight on like what the guys were thinking. But if he's sort of trying to like save himself by being like, no, I'm just fat. I'm like, oh, okay. And I do remember this.
That sort of gives me
more confidence that Alvarado will be the version of himself that we've seen the last 2 years again in 2026.
Yeah. He's one of the tough ones to rank volatility wise. Cause we've seen him be at the top of this list. We've seen him, there's times not too long ago where he was like 90th for me. Cause I just couldn't trust him. But yeah, I think at least he's got the opportunity, the same opportunities he's had there. And he's not going to be the closer, but he's going to be get a chance to be the seventh, eighth inning guy in Philly still, as being the top lefty there now that Matt Strom's not there, especially. Definitely more upside than Tanner Banks. So yeah, I'm interested to see how things work out. Velocity has been like up and down with him the past couple of years. I want to see the spring. That's always a big indicator for him. Like last year's velocity in the spring, I remember that was like, oh, Alvarado's back. He's been like sitting at 99, 100 the spring. And he got off to a pretty good start. And then he just took over the closer role, and then he got suspended. So yeah, we'll see how it looks in the spring. But yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic Alvarado can bounce back. And if he's throwing 99, we'll get him up into the top 20 quickly.
Yeah, if he's throwing 99 for strikes, I feel like that's usually
strikes is another thing.
He's got to throw strikes. All right, let's wrap up the top 50 with these next 10: Jose Ferrer, Brooks Raley, Brian King, Camilo Doval, Tyler Rogers, Tony Santion, Jared Koenig, Gregory Soto, Graham Ashcraft, and Justin Slayton. I think you have a good mix of guys that are just going to be available and pitching late in games, just because of the way the teams are sort of set up. Guys like Brooks Raley and Jared Koenig and Gregory Soto and Justin Slayton are just, you know, because of the lack of options in those bullpen, those guys are going to end up in the later innings. But then we have some guys that are more exciting. I think Ferrer is somebody who has a high ceiling. I'd love to see what the Mariners can do with him. Tony Santion has flashed multiple times a ceiling that seems like he should be a closer, and who knows how long Emilio Pagan can hold on in Cincinnati. And then Graham Ashcraft sort of in that same situation as well. And then you got a couple of former Giants, Tyler Rogers and Camilo Doval, who are both now in the AL East and are very, very different pitchers.
Yeah, I think the AL East, getting out of San Francisco and going to the AL East is definitely a bit of a rude awakening. And I think Rogers is going to be fine, but I don't think if he was in San Francisco again, he would be probably 20 spots higher. I just, going to Toronto, it's a tougher situation, tougher setup for him. So, again, there's not a ton of upside there anyway, outside of holds. So if he's not
doesn't strike anybody
pitching out well, then he's kind of useless. Ferrer, I forgot what it was, but there was something about Washington. Like last year, Washington led the league in fastballs thrown. Like they were just pretty much only throwing fastballs. And then like this spring so far, like they've been like the bottom. They've been throwing like breaking balls more than anyone. We talked about and that was like my hope if Ferrer stayed in Washington, like, are we going to finally see his off-speed stuff a little bit more, because he just threw sinkers all last year,
71%.
and it's a good, obviously that's like it's a good pitch, but like I want to see his off-speed a little bit more. Seattle will definitely will see him mix things up more. I'm really, really excited to see that. Yeah, I mean, like the Reds guys, I don't know, I'm thinking about how I had Phillips above both those Reds guys, but I think the upside in Phillips is better than Santion. Mm-hmm. Ashcraft, though, I mean, Ashcraft's one of those guys too, where I could see him anywhere from 10 to 90, depending on where we're at velocity wise. Is he able to get more swing and miss with his slider? I mean, mm-hmm. he's got, again, he's got like the poor man's like Emmanuel Clase setup already. He's got the slider and cutter, but just needs to make a few little tweaks from Ashcraft and he could really break out. And yeah, I mean, so Koenig is a surprise for Milwaukee, but he's really solid there. Not nothing.
Yeah, quietly.
Yeah, upside's not crazy. Strikeout upside's not crazy, but Koenig's going to get a ton of holds there no matter what.
187 last now. Year.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way that's what that bullpen, that's why it's like weird to me that Murphy wants to mix and match, because I feel like they have like a really good situation as is. They don't really mm-hmm. need to do that.
Yeah, the structure of that bullpen is like it's almost perfect.
It's like built to have set roles. So I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening there. But yeah, Koenig either way save plus holds leagues. Yeah, you can't go wrong.
All right, let's squeeze in 10 more just to get through the first half of this list that you provided. We got Andrew Nardi, Lucas Urseg, Anthony Bender, Brendan Little, Edward Bizzardo, Rico Garcia, Nick Mears, Cole Sands, Braden Fisher, and Matt Festa. I think there's a pair of names that sort of stand out to me. I mean, we've talked a lot about Urseg today. Andrew Nardi's coming back from injury. We'll be competing with Anthony Bender, but he'll be the top southpaw in the Marlins bullpen. Bizzardo was a postseason breakout. Brendan Little was a regular season breakout. A lot of strikeout upside there. Just needs to throw more strikes to really take the next step. Rico Garcia and Matt Festa sort of stand out to me. I know Rico Garcia was moving around teams last year, and I think he was on the Mets, and now he's on the Orioles. And that's definitely an under the radar arm. And then Matt Festa is that's the Twins one, right?
No,
that's
Cleveland David one. Festa. It's his brother. Yeah,
the Cleveland one. Yeah, I guess I'm not really tapped into Matt Festa. Then tell me why you have these guys in the top 60.
Garcia. I mean, Garcia has got a really good chance to be like a seventh inning guy for them outside. I mean, they're going to have Kittredge and Helsley in the eighth and ninth, and then below them, you have the pair of lefties and Enns and Aiken. I think one of those. I think Dietrich Enns is better than Keegan Aiken, or at least was last year. But like the seventh or sixth inning guy outside of those two lefties, I mean, Rico Garcia, probably the favorite for multiple reasons. He doesn't have options. He's going to be on the roster. But he pitched really well once he got to Baltimore last year. And his fastball metrics, I mean, are
elite. I just watched the GIF of him striking out Stanton, and I was surprised by how much rise it had. And then I looked, and it was just 99th percentile IVB. Yeah, pretty impressive.
Fastball's got PLV gives his fastball 5.41. Right, that's his grade for it. 19.3 inches of IVB. So that's a sneaky name in those really deep holds leagues, because I don't think this is a name a lot of people know. He's bounced around a lot, but I think they found something there, Baltimore, with him. So he should get a chance to be in some sort of high leverage role right away. With Festa in Cleveland, I mean, with Armstrong landing there, I'm not sure if Festa's going to have a high leverage spot for him. But down the stretch last year, I mean, once they lost Class A, that they really leaned on Festa as a holds guy for them. 2.95 xFIP, 25.4% strikeout minus walk over the second half for Festa. Again, not a big fastball guy, 92 mile per hour fastball, but it's got that kind of funky shape that like Phil Maton's got. It's more you get more glove side run on his fastball, and he's able to locate it well. Sweeper, good swing and miss offering from him. The only thing with Festa, again, it's, you know, adding Armstrong. Not sure if Festa gets a ton of holds chances right away, but you know, these bullpens are volatile, people get injured, things happen, so I wouldn't count out Festa just yet for holds.
All right, well, that's 60 guys. I think maybe in the future we'll do some deep league targets. Maybe just throw that on at the end of a podcast.
Those weren't deep league enough. Matt Festa's
right. No, we went pretty deep. I just mean you got 120 names on here. We could go all night.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some intriguing names just looking quickly at like the next 60, but that's for like a in the deep podcast, an in the deep reliever crossover.
Ooh, we can do a mashup with in the pen and in the deep.
Yeah, I know.
See if bring we can it back. Make that happen. Yeah. Oh, right. Oh, RIP. Yeah.
Yeah.
No longer with us. Well, that will do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media and anything else you're working on as we near the beginning of the WBC?
Yeah, I know. Fun stuff. WBCs, especially coming off the Olympics, like having that, like, something about the WBC coming right off of the Olympics, having that, like, country, thing to play for is going to be fun, especially right up until the World Cup this year as well. But yeah, I'm working on, or you can find me on socials at I am Rick Graham. Currently working on getting back into some reliever stuff. I've got sleepers and bus relievers coming out next week, and then some deep league targets as well coming out a week after that, I believe. So also at some point soon we'll be updating the list. Again, not really a lot to work on. It hasn't been a ton of injuries so far, like significant injuries for relievers, knock on wood. I know it's gonna happen, like tomorrow there's gonna be something. But yeah, for now it's been pretty steady, so yeah, but there will be updates to the list in the coming weeks.
All right. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. I'm hoping to wrap up my top 100 starting pitchers early next month and start preparing to get the First Pitch podcast rolling. Maybe we can cover some of the WBC action towards the end of spring training. But that's about all I've got working on, and that'll do it for this episode number 149 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.